You're listening to the Voice of the Arts, WQED-FM. Jim Cunningham and Anna Singer with Brian Worsdale, the conductor, the chief of the Three Rivers Young People's Orchestra. Three cheers for 50 years, maestro. Thanks for coming by.
Oh, so happy to be here, Jim and Anna. Really happy to be here today.
It's beautiful that we celebrate 50 years of WQED-FM. We're just a little bit older, maybe. Is there an actual date upon incorporation for the Young People's Orchestra?
I don't have the actual date of when the first rehearsal was. I believe our first concert was 50 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's where we have the distinction. It's not from our first rehearsal as much as I think the first performance. I've done actually a lot of history studying of this. I went through every file, I actually sat in the conference room going through every single program, printed program, over the course of about 3 weeks, and just sat there and just splayed out in our conference table, because I'm a huge fan of history, and I think it's very important that a youth orchestra, any organization, understands its history so that you can be stronger as you look towards the future.
I couldn't agree more. Anna and I are aware of that all the time here, and it's beautiful that the radio station and the Young People's Orchestra have jointly celebrated the 50 years all along the way. And I knew your founders, Phyllis Susan and Bernard Goldberg, Goldberg being the principal flute of the Pittsburgh Symphony of great renown, and Phyllis Susan, an amazing harpist who went on to Carnegie Hall to be in charge of their education programs there. So we get back to both of them in just a little bit. Let's talk about the event celebrating 50 years.
Yeah, cheers to 50 years on May 5th. We actually have two performances. The first performance, our matinee at 1:15. We can't do everything in one performance. It would be an evening of a Wagner opera if we did, because we've added so much to our programming. We now not only have YPO and Symphonette, which were the cornerstones of the foundation and the principles of Three Rivers Young People's Orchestras, but we had included a wind symphony just as I began my tenure. And then subsequently, after the hiring of Pierce Cook to take over Symphonette, we have expanded our string offerings and offered a more, I want to say entry level, but like first year, second year experienced string players, which we call tutti now. And then we added to that called tutti primo, which is more of the front desk players, giving them a little bit more of an intensive experience. So now we have three string orchestras, one wind symphony and one full symphony orchestra. When we think about 50 years ago where we were and where we are now, that's why we have to do two performances. So at 1:15, we'll be featuring our string orchestras, Symphonette, Tutti, and Tutti Primo, and our wind symphony. That will be under the directions of Pierce Cook and Rob Traw, as well as our percussion ensemble playing in the lobby, and a lot of chamber music. There's going to be so much going on during the course of the entire day. Alyssa Arial does our percussion ensemble, and of course Alyssa Hensley runs our chamber program. So we have all of that happening all during the entire course of the day leading up to our 6 p.m. concert, which is YPO performing. Our first act will be from the classical canon. There'll be Brahms' Academic Festive Overture, our concerto winner, Tadao Tomikio, I have to pronounce his name correctly, playing the Greek piano concerto first movement. He's actually in our horn section, but the way our concerto competition works, they can audition on any instrument they play. And we will end with the last movement of Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony, which is actually the cornerstone of our tour, the entire symphony. We'll talk more about that later. And then our Act Two features Broadway's legend, Norm Lewis. We're so excited about that. I know he's interviewed with Anna just recently, upcoming the concert. He just did a video plug for us as well. And we're very excited to bring him, as well as some musical theater students from CMU who are going to sing with us on that program.
And this will happen where, and what's it going to cost me?
Sunday, May 5th at 1:15. Our concerts are always free. That feature our students. There is a fee for the evening concert. It's a small fee. You can go and check out our ticket prices on tripo.org. We are giving out tickets to our families, and so they can still attend their concerts for free. But bringing in such a big name like Norm, we're just trying to offset our costs for such a big. We've had some sponsorships that we could talk about as well to get him out here to Pittsburgh. But we are charging a nominal fee for the extended seating for this event.
And that will be at Carnegie Music Hall.
That'll be at Carnegie Music Hall.
Newly refurbed.
I know. I'm excited about seeing what the space looks like.
Yeah. Very, very exciting. Yeah. All right. Anna Singer, what was interviewing Norm like for those who haven't heard your podcast?
Norm was excellent. I hope that people will go to the podcast and check it out. He is an actor, a singer. He was in that magnificent production of Jesus Christ Superstar that was with John Legend a couple years ago, live television. And he is a dream. And I'm so excited to meet him in person and to hear what he's going to be doing for the concert that evening.
Brian Worsdell, you've invited Anna Singer and yours truly to participate in this event. What were you thinking?
Well, you know, one of the things that I again, going back to the idea of celebrating history, first, one of the things I said to our executive director, both of us, and Lindsay Nova and I both were talking about, how can we make this evening special? And you should know that we've had a lot of great help over the last few years, you know, through Bloomberg Philanthropies and through Michael Kaiser, and having that assistance and how do we expand our reach and how do we reach more students and how do we, you know, maintain our vision and our mission and at the same time make sure more people know what we're doing. One of the things we talked about was the idea of collaboration. And one of the things that I think is valuable here, and one of the reasons I felt strongly about this, was when I first came here, which was 6 years ago in this studio around this time, and interviewed with you right upstairs with Lindsay Nova, it was the fact that in the years I grew up in New York, this is not something that you saw as often. One, New York as a classical radio station market has so many constituencies, it would take them all day to feature, you know, it would take weeks to feature every single youth orchestra, every single community engagement. So they find other ways to do it, but not necessarily on air and not necessarily. Now they're doing podcasts, but we're talking about a decade or two ago before podcasts were all the rage as they are now, especially during the pandemic. So being here and being treated so wonderfully, knowing that I can come here before a concert and just talk about how great it is to work with young people and to celebrate them, it's a wonderful thing. And when you think about the history of this place, of WQED, of Mr. Rogers, I grew up, you know, watching Mr. Rogers on television. It's very interesting that there are places in the country, when you talk about that and the children are younger, they don't understand that. But, you know, my generation, it was Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers and Reading Rainbow and Electric Company, but there was just something special about it. And to be able to walk upstairs into the studio, into the land of make-believe and seeing that stuff and thinking about those 50 years, we need to do something special. And the other thing we needed to do is talk about our founders a little bit more. And Phyllis Susan in particular, and not because our founding music director, not for any reason except the fact that Phyllis Susan became this passionate advocate for education. It wasn't just at Carnegie Hall. She had done TRIPO for more than a decade and then went off to the Philadelphia Orchestra and then from there wound up at Carnegie Hall as director of education. And Phyllis was actually director of education when I was in high school. I didn't know who she was at the time, but I know she was there because that's because Judy Aaron, who was the executive director, brought her there. And we lost both of them, sadly, to this terrible disease. And yet, at the same time, both left a lasting legacy in the work that they did. They were trailblazers. To have Judy Aaron as executive director of Carnegie Hall, she paved the way for people like Clive Gillinson to do the work that they're doing right now at the Hall. And same thing with Phyllis Susan. And so we said, let's establish an award in her name. And who should be our first recipient? And we said, well, if QED is celebrating their 50th, and people like Anna and Jim have been such huge proponents of the culture and the fabric of this community, this makes total sense to us because you've done nothing but further the cause of education just by talking on the radio and getting young people to be interested in doing this kind of thing. So that's where it came from. It was really motivated by the idea that we wanted to make sure that first year the honoree was matched exactly what Phyllis Susan had established and that feeling.
It's a wonderful thing. Anna and I talk all the time about how we're so busy going from one thing to the next that we don't always celebrate how the station, since it began January 1973, has always been behind young music makers, young musicians, the Youth Symphony, your Three Rivers Young People's Orchestra, and all the other. Victory Brinker's teacher was in yesterday. We're so busy doing what we do that we can't always wave the flag as much as we'd like to for TRIPO and the Youth Symphony. It's wonderful.
But we're there and you're here today and we're talking about the fact that it has been there for 50 years. And that is excellent. And you were talking about, you know, your alumni that have graduated and come back and visit and probably talk to the kids. How can they get into the music more and more and more? So it's important.
Yeah, and one of the things that Jim is, it's a broken record for me, and those of you listening to the podcast and you listen to the other broadcast I've done with Jim know that avocational music making is the cornerstone of what my mission is as an educator. Is it great when some of our musicians go on to becoming classical artists and professionals, jazz musicians, whatever they happen to choose? Of course, it's icing on the cake. But there's a huge paradigm shift to the idea of what music should be for people in their lives, as opposed to just padding a profession, so to speak, or create, you know, if they are truly driven to do it, that's what they should do. You know, I know there's a famous quote by somebody who says, you know, if you're going to do this, you understand what you're getting yourself into. But the truth of the matter is, when it comes to education and it comes to performance, you have to have the drive to want to do either or both, because people do both and they are brilliant at it. There are many people who are brilliant teachers who are also brilliant performers, and that's what makes them that total package. But the truth of the matter is, I also am standing here for the people who 10 years from now, when they finish their 2 degrees and they start their families or whatever else they're doing in their lives, and they're looking for a place to make music, and they can look in the calendar and they go, oh, on a Monday night I can play with this community band, or on Tuesday I can play with this community orchestra. Music should be part of the fabric of their life, not just something. It should not just be a stop on the IRT, as we'd say in New York, or you know, or whatever public transport you're thinking of, you know.
Well, I know what listeners are thinking. They're wondering, what are Jim and Anna going to be doing at this thing? Are we going to be nodding sweetly? We're not going to be talking, are we? It's just,
you know,
we accept an award.
You are accepting an award on behalf of QED and on behalf of the people who are grateful for the fact that this radio station exists, because radio stations like this help promote the idea that music is a lifelong pursuit and it doesn't have to be with a paycheck at the end of it. It's great when it is. It's great when you get to live that life and you really enjoy every second of it. But it's also just as equally great to say, I just played this awesome concert after I dusted off my horn after how many, you know, weeks of not having it.
Well, thank you again so much. Anything else that we should say about the events so that people come?
Well, I can only tell you that, you know, Norm is going to be singing a lot of the stuff that you all know him for. One of the things that people don't know, you know, that people do know about Norm is that he was the first African-American to play Phantom on Broadway. While he was not, and those of us who are really nerds about this trivia, he was not the first African-American to play the Phantom. He is the first on Broadway. The first to play him was Robert Guillaume, who most of us know from television or film. But he was also a voiceover actor for Disney for a couple of films. And he also played the Phantom at the Chandler Pavilion and in Los Angeles production. But Norm also originated the role in the Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, not to be mistaken with the Metropolitan Opera Porgy and Bess, but the Gershwin's Porgy and Bess on Broadway. He'll be singing a number that we call a mashup. You know, mashups are always fun. For those of you who don't know what a mashup is, it's usually two different songs that you're able to actually put together into one after another and even overlap it. One of the great Broadway composers who did this so wonderfully, because he was a musician, he was actually a piccolo player in Seuss's band and went to Juilliard, was Meredith Willson, who wrote The Music Man, who brilliantly interspersed one melody over another. But in this case, we're just going to take two of I Got Plenty of Nothing. We're going to take the original and we're going to mash it up with the Gershwin's version. It's a wonderful orchestration that Norm had done for him that he does with Stephen Reinecke, of course, from the New York Pops, who is one of my friends and also my employees outside of Pittsburgh. And he came up with this idea of putting this mashup together, which is kind of fun. And so we're doing that. We're doing I Got Rhythm. So we have two Gershwins on the program. Then we're also going to participate with, by way of his big two Broadway legendary status figures. One, of course, being the one we just talked about, which is the Phantom singing Music of the Night, but the other playing Javert in Les Mis. So he'll be singing Stars from Les Mis as well. I mean, the entire program is right there. And if we weren't enough you know, happy with the musical theater aspect, which is another one of my loves. We're going to end with One Day More from Les Mis. Norm is going to sing alongside students from the Carnegie Mellon University Theater Program. Thanks to Rick Ettinger, we have a number of young students who are so excited. Apparently, they were talking to Alyssa Hensley at Little Night Music about how excited they were that they were going to sing at the music hall with a full orchestra and Norm Lewis. So they're going to sing One Day More, and there might even be an encore in there that Norm has chosen. If there's time and there's enough of an applause, I think, and it really is an appropriate song for the times we're living in right now.
What a great day. Three cheers for 50 years. Yeah. It's going to be fantastic. And the summer, are you going on tour? What are you up to this summer?
Well, we'll tell you about that in a second. I want to add one more thing about the Cheers to 50 Years, which is that there is, for those of you who are interested and want to get a little more time with Mr. Norm Lewis, there is a VIP golden ticket reception. It is our fundraiser. It's our way of raising funds for this wonderful organization. And thanks to the generosity of donors and board members, it's $150. It gives you a ticket to the show, but it also gives you a ticket to the VIP golden reception upstairs after the show, where there'll be some things to eat, you know, a little some stuff to eat and to celebrate and toast with Norm Lewis. So there are a few tickets left for that. So if you're interested, if you go to tripod.org and you get your tickets, you can also put in for that golden VIP. As for our tour, Jim, we're very excited about that too. So we're going to Germany and Prague, and it'll be the first time in over 30 years for our listeners. I'm usually at a summer camp in upstate New York called French Woods, and it's the first time I'm going to be missing a good part of the summer. I'm going to be missing 2 weeks out of that summer to go on tour with the orchestra, and I can't begin to tell you how excited I am to take them on tour. And we're going to bring a lot of the music we're playing this spring, and we're also going to be playing all of Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony. So we're very excited about that. So we'll have some tour rehearsals. We're going to bring some alumni back, and we're in for a real fun time. And I can tell you, I'm very excited about the fact that nearly 90% of our orchestra is going on this tour. So it's very exciting.
Who are your chaperones?
Oh, you know, members of parents, of course, you know, some of our parents who are also professional musicians. And, of course, our wonderful staff led by Lindsay Nova will be also making sure that we maintain great safety and also just take care of the kids and their well-being when they're that far away from home. It's a pretty big deal. Some of these kids, it'll be the first tour they've ever taken.
It's a leap of faith for the parents.
Oh, absolutely. That. Absolutely.
Oh, but what an opportunity for kids to just their minds to be exposed to all of that. It's just
fabulous.
Great. Really is.
We'll look forward to hearing more news about that. Brian, always such a joy to see you. Thank you. So Anna and I are so honored to be part of this. Phyllis Susan, I had a chance to interview her in her office at Carnegie Hall. I remember it so vividly, and she was a marvelous harp player as well, member of the Pittsburgh Symphony. Does she still have any family in town?
I don't know. As a matter of fact,
I'm not aware of any.
Yeah, I was going to turn this around and just ask you, you know, both a couple of quick questions, you know, because I think it's important for the listeners that are listening that are Tripo families that understand how important and how significant this is. You know, I was curious to know what is the favorite thing about the work that you do. I was going to ask Anna that.
Oh, it is talking to people and knowing what they're doing, finding out what's happening, what's going on in our area. We are so blessed because there are so many concerts and events that are part of the structure of what's happening in southwestern Pennsylvania. So I have two people that I'll be talking to today with concerts that are happening this weekend and so much more going on. And to me, that is truly a privilege to be able to bring that to our audience and talk about it.
And Jim, of your many interviews you've had with people over the years, is there any memorable standout for you?
Oh, that's
your career?
Impossible to answer because there are so...
Oh, I have a couple.
Many. Well, we'll start with Anna.
No, I mean, it's been Hélène Grimaud, Garrick Olson, Marvin Hamlisch, Doc Severinsen, just to name Sir Neville Mariner. I mean, oh my goodness, to be able to speak with these people about music.
Well, our relationships with all of the groups in town have produced so many phenomenal visits with the music directors of the Pittsburgh Symphony, Andre Previn, Lauren Mazel, Maris Janssens, all of them. Sir Andrew Davis, I was so sorry that he's gone now, but there's the relationship with the symphony, but the opera. Anna's on the scene with the opera, the singers who've gone on to amazing things, and then all of our music makers here. You know, I would have to say that day in and day out, it's learning from people like you, Brian Warsdale. This quarter hour has been very informative to me and uplifting. It lifts your spirits.
How about this? If any person you've interviewed that we've lost over the years, if you had a chance to interview them again, who would it be? Now you won't have to worry about offending anybody by leaving anybody out there. Who would you? No, because I know how that works. But if there was someone you could talk to again that's no longer with us, who would it be?
You know, it's mind-boggling. I'd have to look at the list, but what comes to mind immediately is Leonard Bernstein. I had one shot at interviewing Bernstein. I'll never forget it because he was in his office at Heinz Hall not wearing a shirt. It was most unusual. The only interview I've ever done, he came right from the stage. He took off his shirt. There were several other people in the room who were his attendants, and he was drinking the scotch and ice cube mixture that he preferred and smoking a cigarette at Heinz Hall in the conductor's dressing room. Nobody cared. They weren't going to tell him not to smoke that cigarette. And, of course, it was Bernstein. And when you listen to the tape of that interview, he was so warm about Fritz Reiner, talking about how Reiner was known as cruel and tyrannical, but how kind he was to Bernstein and giving him the opportunity to do his 1941 premiere of Jeremiah's Symphony at Syria Mosque when he was a student at Curtis and bringing him here. I'll never forget. And, of course, naturally now when I hear West Side Story, I think, why didn't I push him on West Side Story? But, you know, that's just the way life is. And I'm grateful for having had that 20 minutes or whatever with Bernstein.
How do you see QED in the next 50 years, Anna?
Well, I hope that we just continue. I think that delving into podcasts like this has become a wonderful way of expanding our reach and also getting to people who listen to podcasts all the time. A lot of people, especially this generation that is coming up in their 20s and even 30s, they're listening to podcasts. They're not watching TV. So hopefully we can have a reach that goes out there and expresses what's happening here in Pittsburgh and how active all the classical music is.
Exactly. And you mentioned the history. Again, something that broadcasters are very bad about cataloging and archiving their material. But podcasts are an archive of what's happening in this town at any given time. We have that now. It's on the wall over there in reel-to-reel tapes and DATs and formats that don't play back anymore, cassettes. But the podcast, we hope, will always be out there as a record. And with the internet, we can send it around the globe. Anybody can hear this conversation anywhere in the world. And your young people's orchestra, too, if they find it on the web. So
that's what makes it exciting.
That's a beautiful thing.
Oh, yeah. Without question. And I'll leave you with one more question. And before I do, though, I also want to point out that our 115 concert, and I always want to make sure that I'm talking about this because we value our educators here. You know, a youth orchestra is the extra thing that these young people do. But what they do at school is so vital. And we have a guest conductor for the Wind Symphony. Will Guest from Avonworth School District is actually going to be guest conducting one of the pieces. And we have Dan Peraski, one of the great flute teachers in the area, is going to be soloing with Wind Symphony. So on top of everything else that's going on, we are featuring also local Pittsburgh talent. And I think that's very important. And it leads me to one other thing for Jim, which is, who is on your bucket list to interview?
Oh, there's so many that we don't get to, Anna. I don't know. That's a long list as well. Bucket list, I don't know. It's always those who are no longer available to us that are really on the list. I wish I could have interviewed Reiner, for example, Fritz mm-hmm. Reiner, or Steinberg. I never got a chance to interview William Steinberg, but I don't know. We're so blessed. I've been able to speak to almost everybody, but now we want to talk to Klaus Mäkelä, the new chief of the Chicago Symphony. How can a 28-year-old guy have two major orchestras at the same time in the world? We've got to talk to Simon Rattle someday. We've never had him in Pittsburgh. You know, it's a long list because the classical music world is so big.
Yeah, but the fact that this orchestra has such great access to so many different guest conductors that come in, people who I remember very fondly, you know, some of the people that I would hear or I would see some of the recordings that would come out, you know. And, you know, one thing I remember telling you 6 years ago, my last trip here was when I was 25 years old, It was the last time I was in Pittsburgh, and I watched Maurice Janssens conduct the Pittsburgh Symphony, and that's when Sumner Erickson was still playing tuba, because I found it very peculiar that the tuba player was standing up while they were playing, and he was my friend's. I was here celebrating my friend's 21st birthday, and he was a CMU tuba student, and I said to him, I said, why does your teacher stand up? Because he likes to stand up when he plays. And I said, I've never seen that before, but I heard this amazing orchestra play, and I know that many people say all the different things. I know Malia has said, you know, that Pittsburgh, you know, the symphony punches above its weight class. The truth is, I think Pittsburgh, especially as an arts and cultural institution, does that. I think people don't understand that. And as someone who grew up in New York City, I could tell you that, you know, New York City. I will always be a proud Brooklynite. I will always be a proud that is my hometown. Nothing will ever change that, you know. But at the same time, I'm always sad when people don't venture outside the five boroughs and see what's going on in the world outside of New York City, and seeing all, especially in the world of music education, especially in the world of performing arts. And it's always a pleasure. Especially when you've made this your home, you get to see this. I get to go and watch a rehearsal of the Pittsburgh Symphony. I can just walk in, you know, sign in, have a seat. They know that I run the local youth orchestra. They're very grateful to just let me sit there and have a listen at a rehearsal. And since it's right down the street from my office, I have a little coffee. I listen, then I walk into my office, and I'm energized for the rest of the day watching this amazing rehearsal. And the fact that all these coaches and these musicians all give their time to work with our young people. We're doing a playing coach this Saturday with our string section, and then we do sectionals throughout the whole year with members of the orchestra. I mean, it's I know it's common in some places, but it's not that common, and we should never take it for granted. So it's a blessing to just be able to talk to you all.
Love to speak with you, Brian. Three cheers for 50 years.
Yay,
hooray!
Years.
We'll Woo-hoo. See you at the show.
Thanks so much, everybody. Thank you, Anna. Thank you, Jim. We'll be right back.